Welcome back to the Blessed Business Podcast. I'm your host, Hunter Haley, and co-hosting today with me again is Tony Pimpo.
Thank you, sir. Glad to be here live from the Blessed Business HQ.
That's right. It seems like we're always doing these when there's some kind of disaster going on. It's been thunderstorms or tornado watches. Today, we're actually running off of generator power because there's been a huge storm that hit Memphis, Tennessee. And so we're having to do it from our underground. We've got like minimal lighting and everything else going on. But the show never stops. So here we go. And the reason why we want to do this is because we have some important things to talk about. I was reading a very important article from Business Wire, and it said that 90% of Americans want to be their own boss.
Wow.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
There's a 90% chance if you're listening to this, if you're not your own boss, you want to be your own boss, right?
I think the other 10% maybe are their own boss.
maybe that's what it is. And so, Tony, if someone wants to be their own boss, what do they need to do?
Well, that's a very good question. I think you might have the answer for us. What does someone need to do if they want to be their own boss?
I have an idea, and this may be a bad idea, maybe a good idea. You can tell me, but what if they took the launch course?
You know what? Sounds like a good idea to me.
It might work.
What is the launch course?
Well, the launch, I'm glad you asked, Tony. It's not like we set each other up for this or anything.
Oh, no, of course not.
But the launch course is a new course that we've created here at The Blessed Business. And this is where we take you step by step on how to launch a business. This is one of the biggest questions that I personally get asked, and we get asked here at The Blessed Business is, hey, I've got this idea for a side hustle, or I don't have an idea and I want an idea for a small business. I want to be my own boss. How do I get started? Well, this course is the answer to that question. So if you want to bring your entrepreneurial dreams to life and quit sitting on the sidelines, you need to go to www.theblessedbusiness.com/launch. So there will be a place where you can put in your email address to join our VIP waitlist. We got a better name for that. This is the launch list. I love it. And so if you want to join the VIP launch list to see exactly when the course is available, you can do that by going to www.theblessedbusiness.com/launch. We've already started recording it. We've already got content coming together. It's going to be launching very soon. And if you go ahead and join the pre-launch, VIP launch list here, then we'll actually be emailing out a special discount code for all of you, early bird, podcast listeners.
I like the sound of that.
This is our core team here, right? And so if you're wanting in on this launch course, you need to go to theblessedbusiness.com/launch and get signed up today. So you need to just do it.
What are you waiting for? Do it.
That's right. If you're driving down the road,
yeah,
listening to this podcast, what do you do, Tony?
You pull over and you type that in your browser and you sign up and you get back on the road.
You just do it. Right. Well, speaking of do it, let's get on to today's content in this episode. In today's episode, we are going back to the topic of how to win friends and influence people, the incredible book by Dale Carnegie. And last time we talked about the part one. What was part one and two? Actually, part one and two we covered. What were you talking about in that, Tony?
So in that episode, we talked about fundamental techniques in handling people.
Mm-hmm.
So we went through the 3 points that were there. Don't criticize, condemn, or complain. Give honest and sincere appreciation. Arouse in the other person an eager want. Those were a few of the ones we covered. And then 6 ways to make people like you.
Which is part two.
Part two, yep. Become genuinely interested in other people. Smile. Remember a person's name is the sweetest and most important sound in any language.
That's right.
Being a good listener, encouraging others to talk about themselves, talking in terms of the other person's interests, and then making the other person feel important. So doing it sincerely. That's important.
Right.
Absolutely.
I was actually talking to someone the other day. They said this is one of their favorite books, but he said a lot of people miss the sincere part.
Yeah.
Because if you, anything that you do in these 30 principles that we're covering from this book that he has about how to win friends and influence people is if you don't do it with sincerity, it just becomes empty.
Right.
It's very empty.
People can tell.
People can tell. And the topic for today is winning people to your way of thinking. And it's important for them to not think you're a big fake if you're going to win them over your thinking.
Absolutely.
And so the first part here, this is part three. So again, it's 30 principles broke up into four parts. So this is basically part three of the book that we're covering, but it's our second episode, if that makes sense. Hopefully not too confusing. But it's
part 2.3.
2.3, yeah. People are going to be really confused now. They're like, wait, which episode am I on? But in this particular section, there's actually 12 principles. So this is a good chunk of this section here in part three. And the first one is the only way to get the best of an argument, drum roll please, is to avoid it. And now all the conflict.
I disagree.
Right. All the conflict avoiders out there are like cheering, like, yes, I knew it.
I knew my way was right.
That's right. Well, the thing is, you can't avoid conflict entirely, but you can avoid having an argument. So there's a difference between having an argument and having conflict.
Right. Conflict can be healthy, yes, as long as it comes to resolution.
Yes. And handled properly.
Yes. And arguments are usually unproductive.
Yes. And arguments often breed resentment and rarely resolve disagreements effectively.
Right.
So instead of arguing, try to understand the other person's viewpoint and engage in a civil discussion. Civil is key there. Mm-hmm. This approach promotes understanding and cooperation rather than hostility. Because if you make an enemy, right, well, mm-hmm, and you're trying to win friends and influence enemies, if you're trying to influence someone
who's already enemies, you said
that's right. it's actually an inside joke. For a long time, I thought the book's title was "How to Win Friends and Influence Enemies," but it's "How to Influence People." But
yeah, well, somebody actually just wrote a book called that, "How to Win Friends and Influence Enemies." It was Will Witt from, I believe, Prager. So
okay,
yeah.
Really?
So, yeah, someone did do that.
See, I just had the idea too late.
Look at that.
But if you're approaching people, right, you're trying to win them over your way of thinking, you can't let hostility reign. Because once people's walls go up, you have to work 10 times harder to bring those down. So yeah.
An argument implies anger.
Yes.
So I think rarely does pulling in those kinds of emotions result in anything
good. Help.
Especially in, business contexts, etc. You know,
yes,
that's not a place to really let those emotions be out there on the table. It's really, you want to work toward a constructive resolution. And mm-hmm, I think that's what the point of that principle is come at it from a, how do we resolve this?
Yes.
Where do we disagree and where do we agree, and is there a bridge to cross that divide? If not, how do we work it out,
right?
So how do we get to a good conclusion? And I think that's the goal of that principle.
Well, because an argument implies that you're just batting it back and forth in disagreement,
right?
Whereas healthy conflict is where you're coming together. So I think the big takeaway here is being able to recognize when you're going down the path of argument, when you feel the conversation leading to being more argumentative, and it's like you're defending your point of view and I'm defending my point of view, and like people are getting passive aggressive and then just straight out aggressive, then that's when you like put the brakes on it and say, you know what, maybe we can shelve this for later, or try to find ways to avoid it, because you won't avoid that because that's not healthy.
Right. Yeah. So. And I think not like staking your position right at the start.
Mm.
Because then if you have to back away from it, it feels like a climb down,
Like a defeat, yes.
Yeah, exactly. And no one likes feeling that, so.
Yeah, who wants to lose an argument? No one wants to.
No, I mean, it's just, it's kind of a thing we all share. So, yeah, just like listening. And then if you still hold that opinion after hearing it out, and a lot of these are like someone comes to you with a problem in the workplace, mm-hmm, or an idea or whatever. Well, just listen. And then if you have a disagreement or you still think what you think, you could talk about it, but mm-hmm, maybe wait till you heard it out first.
Yes. Well, and that leads into point number two. Tell us about point number two, the second principle in this part three here.
Well, this one says to show respect for the other person's opinion and never say you're wrong.
Mm.
Right? Obviously, not in a moral context, but in an opinion discussion here, someone can like blue and the other person likes green, and nobody's wrong, right? I mean, it's just a matter of opinion. And so many times these kinds of discussions revolve around matters of opinion. Mm-hmm. And where a lot of the difficulty can arise is when we say, well, one way is the right way.
Yes.
You know, and do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, for me, when you say you're wrong, you several things. Number one is you're raising the other person's walls, like we said, and so that's going to lead to defensiveness and close the door to further conversation. And if further along in the conversation, if you do start listening to them and you realize, I'm the one who's wrong, or and they aren't wrong, they're actually right, or you know what, they could be equally as right, or we're equally as wrong. Now you've already emphatically stated the point that you're wrong. You now have to. It's harder for you. Know, it's you know harder for you to save face,
right?
When you put up that wall, whereas instead of creating these situations where you know you're both, you know, kind of your ego's at stake, you can just kind of keep it open ended and say, yeah. Well, let me listen, like you said, listen to what you have to say, and then we can talk through it instead of saying, hey, you're wrong. That's terrible. Like, you know, instead respect their opinion as an opinion and don't take it as a personal threat or as gospel truth. Just say, well, that's your opinion, and I appreciate you sharing that with me. I would like to share my opinion in good faith that you'll appreciate it as well.
Yep. And sometimes in environments where that doesn't happen, people just don't say anything at all. And then you mm-hmm. have organizations that start crumbling.
Yes.
Because nobody said what needed to be said. Right. You know, and then I think having honest and open communication in a right and you know, constructive manner keeps an organization at the top. It keeps mm-hmm. it agile, responding to competition, keeps it innovative, you yes. know, all those things.
Because that bleeds over into your culture and also your character as a person. You know, if you're a salesperson and they're like, oh, you know, you're trying to sell vacuum cleaners and you're like, well, this one's, you know, so much better. And they're like, well, no, I think this one's better. You're like, well, you're wrong. You know, my product's way better. Well, you've immediately thrown up the defenses of your customer. And it's like, you're not trying to make them, you know, in the book, it gives examples of where like, you know what, you're right. That is a very good product, but you know, here's some other reasons, things to consider. And blah, blah. So he like uses that and he will try to agree to with people in a way as quickly as he can and like reinforce, hey, I understand where you're coming from, but here's another perspective. And so what you're doing is you're making it easy for others to admit their mistakes. And this kind of leads into the next point, which is begin in a friendly way. That really sums up a lot of this, is you want to start conversations in a friendly manner, and it can set a positive tone for the interaction. So it's instead of an interrogation, it's an interaction. It makes people more receptive to what you have to say and can facilitate a more open and constructive conversation rather than just, you know, one-way monologue of here's why you're right, I'm right, and you're wrong.
Yeah, that's kind of where that openness comes in,
mm-hmm.
and not shutting it down right from the start.
Yes. So number five, let's go through that. So if you've started friendly, another thing you can do is you can get the other person to say yes, yes immediately. Now this one was a little confusing to me at first, but kind of reading through the book. He gave some interesting examples. I actually listened to the audiobook as well, and it's really cool to hear it kind of, you know, coming to life. But this is starting with topics where you can agree can help build rapport and make the other person feel receptive to your ideas. It's a way of establishing common ground before moving on to more contentious issues. I actually talked to someone one time who was using this for starting Bible studies. So you would say, well, do you believe in God? Well, before you go in through a big doctrinal discussion about, you know, oneness versus Trinity versus baptism versus how you do communion versus any number of things, then it's important to make sure that, you know, you are on the same page to begin with.
Right.
And so if you don't start on the same page of like there is a God, then all the other, you know, potential discussions thereafter is completely irrelevant. You got to start there. But if they say, yes, I do believe there is a God, and well, then do you believe the Bible is the Word of God? Yes, I do.
Right.
Then, you know, you can kind of go from there and kind of build all these yeses. And then if you have something that you want to point out and say, hey, this is what the Word of God says, and this is God's Word, who said is right. And so it just kind of leads on. You can use the same thing in business, getting people to agree with you on the front end.
Yes. And if you do that, you have a common basis of understanding. Because, for instance, like you mentioned in the Bible study context, if someone doesn't believe that the Word of God is the Word of God, and you're arguing from the Word of God, you know, you're going to have difficulty because you're expecting them to take what you're saying, right?
Yes.
So to have that kind of a conversation, you need to know where they're coming from. And so some of that getting to yes is finding out where they stand. Because if you're expecting them to say yes, yes, and they're saying no, no, you know, your argument wasn't going to be very effective if you assumed that. Right.
Well, and one way, an example in the business world you could use is you could say something like, all right, let's say you want to change the break room, right? There's an issue with people leaving their leftovers in the fridge way too long, and they're moldy, or people's getting into their other leftovers. Anyway, so there needs to be a system and a process for cleaning out this fridge, right? In the break room. Well, instead of going around to everyone and saying, man, this is a mess in here, and like, you know, or you as the boss saying, you know, who's being such a lazy bum and not taking their leftovers home and leaving them? Well, that's going to raise walls, right? And that's not beginning in a friendly way. But if instead you have a company, as part of a company meeting, you're like, hey, do you guys think that we should have professionalism both in our business and in our personal space around here and respect each other's space? Absolutely. Yes, I agree. You know, do you think that, you know, we provide a refrigerator for everyone? Does everyone think that that's a convenient factor? Yes, yes. Well, it's not convenient. Does everyone agree it's not convenient when people leave their moldy leftovers in there and don't clean them out, and then they stink up the entire office? Well, yes, that's not very convenient. Mm-hmm. So then we should all work to, you know, do X, Y, and Z. Well, yes, we should.
Those were all yes,
yes
questions, and they were structured in a way to where the answer was yes.
Right.
It wasn't a negative. It was a positive.
Right.
Even though there were some negative things implied in that, right? But the whole thrust of it was, how do we change it? How do we improve? Yes.
Well,
one's going to say no to that.
And if there's like hopefully Joe Schmo in the corner is the one who is the culprit, and everyone knows it, but we're not pointing Joe Schmo out and crucifying him in front of everyone.
Right.
Instead, we're collectively saying, this is something we can do together. That is a much better way of doing it.
Gives them a great opportunity to just change,
yes,
you know, which is what you want.
Well, and point number three, and you're saying, well, wait, I thought we went from 4 to 5 to number three. And the reason we're going back to number three,
we're putting this into practice.
We're putting this into practice because Hunter was like just going along here and realized he didn't get to number point three. And number three is actually very relevant. It's, if you're wrong, admit it quickly and emphatically.
We were wrong. We skipped over it.
So when we were on point number two and Hunter went to number four, I was wrong. So I want to admit that. So that was not on purpose. That was actually a real life example.
Look,
I was wondering
that.
Why Tony was over here trying to signal to me. I'm like, what is going on? But he was saying, you missed number three. But admitting our mistakes can have a disarming effect.
Yeah.
It really can. It shows our humility and integrity, and it can work to make a, you know, build respect and trust in our relationships.
Yes.
And it can make it easier for others to admit their mistakes as well.
And I've seen that play out when somebody does admit that, it doesn't diminish respect and it only increases it. You know, when you see that someone's willing to admit a fault or, you know, apologize, those things are trust building, and they only serve to benefit the relationship.
And it also creates an atmosphere where everyone realizes that it's okay to be human and it's okay to be wrong.
Yes. Because you don't want a cover-up culture.
No, 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 no. A cover-up culture, I like how you said that. A cover-up culture is very negative and has lots of dire consequences.
Yes.
Because people are always sweeping stuff under the rug and you don't realize there's actually issues.
Right, right. But if it's okay to admit that you're wrong or something didn't go right or go well, there's an openness. And I think that those things tend to happen less in a culture that encourages that.
Okay. Well, I'm not qualified to talk about point number six. So Tony, why don't you help the people out here and tell them what number six is? I realize I struggle with this. So go ahead.
Well, I disagree, but you know, let the other person do a great deal of the talking. So
you're good at this, Tony. I mean, like I you deserve it.
I read the book. I mean, what can you say? What can I say? It's one of the things about this is that people value the opportunity to express their thoughts and feelings.
Yes.
So, I do some consulting and we kind of joke sometimes that you are, playing the part of a therapist many times. most of the time, the problem isn't technology. They're frustrated. You just got to sit there and listen to them, you know, and they pay you to do it. So letting the other person do the talking is just part of hearing them out, respecting them, and you learn a lot that way, right?
Yes. Was it Chris Voss in the book, Never Split the Difference? Never Split the Difference, How to Negotiate Like Your Life Depends on It. He talks about, I think, was it called The Black Swan? I think is what it was.
Yes.
Where it's basically this unknown variable that you're having this conversation or you're having this negotiation and there's something out there and you can't seem to get there, but you don't realize that the person you're talking to, there's an issue other than the issue that you're talking about.
Yes.
Or there's some kind of unknown factor. And so you're going through this and you're trying to go with one route, but because you're talk, and you didn't give the other person time to like open up and expose this entirely different thing, relevant piece of information over here. Changes the whole game. We had this last night. We actually had some friends over and we were playing a strategy game. And as we're going through this, it was, you know, it was a lot of rules, a lot of different things. And we'd get through this and be like, oh, you know, this person had this special card that could allow them to, you know, ignore this part of the rules and do this special move. And like, we're like, oh, how did that happen? Well, that's a black swan event. And so if we'd have been paying, you know, letting the person who's reading the rules talk more. And then also if we would have been, you know, waiting around to know more details before we, you know, used up all of our moves, then we would have missed that opportunity. And conversations are like that. They're very strategic at times, especially if it's a tense situation with an employee or a coworker or someone, and you have to let them talk it out. And you're like, well, why do you need off early on Friday? Well, I just need off Friday. Well, why? You know, tell me about it. What's going on? Well, actually, you know, my child has, you know, been sick and they've had issues and stuff and they've got an appointment with a specialist. Yeah, I actually had this happen. I was working with a banker one time. It was a new bank account we were setting up. It was a kind of a newer account representative, and we were talking everything. And I said, oh, you know, I started talking to him and letting him talk about his life. And before we knew it, he had a child that was at St. Jude's Hospital. And they were going through a lot as a family. And I'd been a little bit frustrated with how slow the process was. And he kind of looked like he was taking his time. But I realized he had a lot going on in his mind. And I needed to slow down the conversation and not just take time to do our business and get it accurate, because I was throwing too much at him too fast because he had a lot of other things on his mind. But I also needed to take time and think about him from a human perspective.
Yes.
And part of being, you know, doing business as mission is taking those opportunities while we're in the course of business, and we're able to introduce him to our church and you know, say, hey, we're going to be praying for you, stuff like that, because that would have been a missed opportunity if I'd have just blown through it and not let him talk about it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we probably all have had phone calls or whatnot where someone will call and they do most of the talking and they're like, Dan, that was a great conversation, you know? Yes. And it's like, I mostly just listen to them, you know what I mean? But that's what that person needed, you know, is to have a place to talk. And even with my own self, a lot of times the way that I process stuff is talking about it. So sometimes I'm working through it in my own head. I think there was an example in this. If it wasn't in this book, it was in something else I was reading recently. But Abraham Lincoln called his friend to the White House.
Yes, it was this book.
Was it this? Yeah, yes, okay. Yes, yes. I don't know. I was got so many different things floating around there. But he just brought him there, talked to him for like a day, a solid day.
Yes.
Didn't ask him anything, shook his hand, sent him off. But that's what he needed. He just needed
to
someone.
Make the decision.
Yeah. So he wasn't following that principle there, but the other guy was following that principle.
Exactly. Well, he just needed to talk through it.
Yep.
And sometimes that's the best way you can serve someone else is to just let them talk it out. He had to make a huge decision, you know, from a presidential standpoint. And he knew that his, I think it was his neighbor or somebody he knew from his past or a relative or someone that he was a good
old
listener,
friend,
an old friend. And he brings him there to the White House just to listen. And when he was done, man, that was a good conversation. You've really helped me think about this.
Yeah.
It's like, well, okay.
Anytime.
Anytime. I can just sit here and listen. So, number seven, let the other person feel that the idea is his or hers. Have you ever practiced this or seen this used?
Oh, yes. So, there was someone that I knew years ago that this would happen all the time. You would say an idea. And they'd be like, oh, no. But then like 20 minutes later, oh, I have an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the idea you said. And so you just, that's a great idea. You just go with it. And I think it was even, it was in this book too, where someone talked about that. I think it was like FDR or no, maybe it's one of the Roosevelt, Theodore Roosevelt, something like that.
One of them, yeah.
you know. Someone gave him an idea and he just picked up on it a little bit later and you're like, you know what? Just let him take it.
Yeah.
And the thing is, if you want to, for there to be change, if you care about the credit, then you're going to be like, well, that was my idea. But if you just care that it gets implemented,
because
that's for the best of the company or the organization or whatever, you don't really care, you know?
That's good. Well, because people are more likely to accept and act on ideas they believe they had a part in creating.
Yes.
And by involving others in the ideation process, you can foster ownership and commitment in it. And so when you make them think, okay, this was my idea, or I have a part in this idea, and you can kind of, you don't want to manipulate people into it, but you can kind of lead them on that path. Like you said, you don't have to get the credit for it as long as it's done.
Right. Exactly. And like you said, that's a good point that when someone feels that, there's much more of a sense of ownership and desire to make something succeed because they're attached to it.
Yes.
And so I think it's healthy and good.
I think my wife does this because she'll be like, does it stink in here? And I'm like, oh, maybe. And I was like, maybe. I wonder if it's the trash. Well, it could be. It's like, man, someone should really take that out. Oh, you're right. I should take the trash out. Wait,
she's been reading
this book. No, I'm teasing. Usually it's me coming in and finding stuff and trying to take care of it. But anyway, she's awesome. But I don't mean to throw her under the bus at all. But it can be simple, practical things like that that make all the difference. Whereas if your spouse or your boss, or if you are the boss, you go in and tell people, hey, it stinks in here, fix it. Right?
Yeah.
Then that's met with a lot more resistance rather than, man, I wonder if it'd be a lot better in here if it didn't stink so bad. Well, why does it stink so bad? You know, it's like, why does your work keep being, falling short of the bar? Like, how can we fix that? Well, we could do this or this. Well, why don't we do that? You know? So if you let people lead people on the path of letting it be their own idea. So, Tony, tell us about principle number eight.
Principle number eight. Try honestly to see things from the other person's point of view.
I think you do this well.
Thank you.
You do.
I appreciate that. I think this is just putting yourself, as they say, in their shoes, right? If you look at it from their perspective, you may see things that were hidden to your own understanding of the situation. They may look at this decision this way or see what happened like this because of, you know, the way that they were raised or the way that they think about this particular topic. You know, there's so many different angles that people can come from. And I think that trying honestly to see that is important because, and this is something really big. I think Chris Voss has talked about this and being a part of hostage negotiation. Empathy is not agreement.
That's good.
It's just understanding their position. So like you can say, I understand where you're coming from.
I don't agree that you robbed the bank. And
I don't agree. I just understand your, that's how you felt about it. It wasn't, and in this case, obviously like it's wrong, right? They're dealing with people that, you know, kidnap and whatnot. They just need to understand their motivation.
Yes.
But even sometimes just expressing that they heard them out is enough to,
disarm them.
Literally and figuratively. Yeah. I mean, these are people who, just maybe hours earlier, you know, brandished a gun and went into a bank.
Right.
But somehow the person on the other line listening to them causes them to give it all up. So it's a powerful thing. When you realize that it's not agreement.
Yes.
It's just understanding.
A lot of people have that as a fallacy. They think that if I if I empathize with your position, I'm agreeing with it.
Right.
But it does not necessarily mean that. And so you're not giving up quote unquote territory or ground.
Yep.
By empathizing, but instead you're helping to build that bridge.
Yes. Yes. And that's how something can get done. That's how change can happen.
Yes. That's awesome. And number nine kind of leads into that is be sympathetic with other people, other person's ideas and desires. So sympathy can validate people's feelings and show that you care about their perspectives. The validation can make them more receptive to your perspective. And this is the balance, like you said, you can't be sympathetic with something that you disagree with or that they're wrong with, but you can empathize. Whereas other situations, you may sympathize with their and validate their feelings. Like, you know, I can understand why you feel this way because you know what? You were done wrong. You know,
right.
Jim Bob over at the water cooler really did hurt your feelings.
Yes.
And he shouldn't have done that.
Exactly.
But we're not going to like black each other's eye and get fired over this, are we? Let's be the bigger person and figure this out.
Yeah. So to express that, if there was a situation like that, honestly expressing that makes somebody not feel that they have to convince the other person of why, you know, this happened and why it was wrong or whatnot. So I think just providing that space to say that is important because you could just be like, oh, well, no big deal. I'm sorry, you know, and just like, let's move on, right? And that's like, not sympathy.
Their feelings are still hanging out there to dry, and they're like, whoa, you know, they can't move on.
Yeah, if it's genuine, something really did, you know, go on and you can help fix it or be a listening ear or whatever the case may be to express that often gives someone the, you know, what would you say, the space, whatever, to move on.
Yes.
You know, just, okay, I kind of cleared there and I got that out there and now we can move forward.
I can release it.
Yeah, release. Yeah, there you go.
That's true. So what is number 10?
Number 10, this is a good one. Appeal to the nobler motives.
I like this one a lot. I like the saying that if you try to set the bar high for people, most of the time they try to achieve it. People like to see themselves as good and principled, as, you know, honest, you know, good citizens, good people, good workers. And when you appeal to these self-perceptions, we can often sway opinions and inspire action. Again, not to manipulate them, but to try to help them to recognize their higher calling and that they have more to offer and that they are better than this. It's kind of like if both of your kids are fighting each other and they're like, you know, at each other's throats. It's like, no, you are better than this.
I think it's a form of just faith and believing in people to do that. How many stories have we heard of somebody who, you know, I think they've done studies where a teacher that was a really poorly performing class, and somehow
they were in and out of detention.
Yeah, there was
like
a mix-up.
IQs were low. They were just
And the teacher gets this class that was the lowest performing class, but there was a mix-up, and they thought they got the highest performing class.
I think I remember, if I remember correctly, and there may be several variations of this story, but they thought it was their IQ numbers. Like,
yes.
Hey, there's a list of the students and all their IQ numbers. Like, wow, these have really high IQs. And she's like, man, these people are brilliant. But it was their locker numbers.
Oh, or something. You're right.
Or something like that. Yes. And you remember different variations of the story, but that's the variation I remember. So they're like going through and, you know, as people would act up in class and we're like, this ain't right, you know, and she's like, no, you're better than this. You guys have some of the, I'm looking at your test scores right here. You guys have some of the highest IQs. You just don't believe in yourself. And like, you can do better. And like her, like you know, just like really inspired them. And they like started outperforming everyone else. And it's, so it's this, that just proves how important this really is.
It's powerful when you think about it. The fact that that really, that teacher's perception of the class and that new bar that he or she was setting for that class literally affected their results.
Yes. And their performance changed.
Yeah. It measurably.
Yes. You know, I've tried to apply this, which I'm very thankful. Actually, your brother, Duncan Pimpo, he works for us full time, and he is amazing. He really is. I mean, I can just say that honestly. I'm not putting on or trying to be flattery, but when I'm around him or when I'm to other people, whether he's around or not, I try, and with other team members as well, I say, you know what, they are just so good at doing X, Y, and Z. I focus on the things to like, you know, to emphasize the areas that they're good at, because I know that what you emphasize and what you reward is what you get more of.
Right.
And so if you reward people's sense of, you know, calling and purpose and I'm doing great and like, this is awesome and I can even do better, you get more of that. Whereas if you look at people and are like, man, you're just so dumb. Man, you're just lucky that we don't fire you around here. You know, you show up to work and like, this is just barely okay.
Yeah.
What are you going to get more of?
More of that. There's no inspiration. There's no belief that someone can change. I think this is by far, it's the more successful method in dealing with people. Just to believe in them and to put that out there for them to achieve.
Yes. Yes. Hey, look, you can do this.
Yeah.
This is you are a high performing salesperson. So I know we had a bad week, but you know what? That's okay, because you are a high performing salesperson. When you reinforce that, look at the week when you had you closed 7 deals in 1 week, man, like you are such a good salesperson. I mean, like we talked about this, not that he needs, you know, pep talk every so often, but we all need that. And so if we have a culture of that, and he does that for me and I do that for him and we do that for other team members and like realtors we work with and in the land business that we're doing. And we're like, man, you are the best realtor we work with. You know, you just constantly do this, man. The banker, man, you have just pulled us out of a jam more times than anybody else. And you just do such a great job. When you set the bar high like that, then people want to live up to that. So the next time you're in the jam, what does the banker try to do? He tries to pull you out.
Right. Absolutely.
Because like, that's the kind of guy he is. Cause that's what you told him he is.
He's the guy you call when you're in a jam.
That's right. And so this truly is important. So number 11, I really like this.
Hunters, this is yours. Totally. You're good at this.
They're like, okay, what is this? Dramatize your ideas. And this sounds kind of crazy, but making your ideas vivid and engaging can make them more persuasive. This doesn't mean being dishonest or exaggerating, but rather presenting your ideas in an interesting and a compelling way.
Yeah.
I love to do this. I get so excited and passionate about things that I try to, you know, to let that enthusiasm just kind of come out of me.
Telling that story.
Telling the story, yes, about how this can change our lives and benefit people and all that. And if you dramatize, if you make it sound exciting, people get excited about it. If you're like, oh yeah, we're doing this thing where we launched this course about how to launch your own business and, you know, it's okay. You know, you might actually launch, but you know, most small businesses fail within the first 1 to 5 years. Yeah. Well, how is that going to get people excited about the new things that we're launching? Right.
Yeah. And you know, I think there's multiple different ways to do that. Some of it is if it's you're involved in speaking, it's not talking in a monotone way, you know, like this is my plan for the future, you know, and also just painting a picture with your language. I have friends who, like my brother, my sister, my family, and then friends who like write songs and do things. And they're like literally painting pictures with their words. Like yes. I can see things as
it
I
brings
hear.
Brings it to life.
Yeah. And you visualize it. You're taken there. But because it's like they're using descriptive language to convey what they want you to see. And so I think even in a business context or an idea that you might have, just try to think of how do I paint that picture for someone? And that's often all you need to actually make it more dramatic. It's not so much like it says, not embellishing it. It's just really painting the picture so they can see it too.
That sounds like a great challenge for someone to do this.
It does.
So why don't you tell us about number 12 there, Tony?
Number 12 is throw down a challenge. Can anyone hear throw down?
That's right.
It says, and you know, this principle is that people often rise to challenges, right? Especially if they find them engaging. And so by challenging others, we can stimulate that creativity, that desire to achieve, to overcome. There's that innate sense of wanting to overcome challenge. And I think that, there's a lot of ways to incorporate that. And that's where maybe some creativity can come in.
Absolutely. Well, and I like what you said about people often try to rise to the challenge. And this kind of goes parallel with appealing to the people's nobler motives. If you appeal to them from the character and from a good versus evil standpoint of like, you know, as Donald Miller uses that, the philosophical reason in his 7-part framework for marketing, trying to appeal to people. But if you're appealing to their nobler motives, and then you put a challenge with that, and if you've dramatized this, you've kind of got them excited. You've layered in all these different 12 things that we've talked about today, and you package them together, the conversation is going to go so much different. And they're going to leave so inspired and ready to take on this challenge that they will absolutely get it done or get as close as they possibly can. If you're like, you know, we had a great, fourth quarter, we are going to absolutely nail it because you guys are the best salespeople on the entire earth, you know, and like, you know, you just kind of work through this, and it's important because why, you know, all these things, we actually talk about that in our launch course, your why. You can go back to your why. You can appeal to that nobler motive. You can set the bar high, and people will rise to the challenge. So throw down that challenge, and I'm going to throw down a challenge. Do you know what challenge I'm going to throw down?
I think I know.
I'm going to challenge you to go check out the www.theblessedbusiness.com/launch because as we mentioned, we are in the process of finalizing our launch course on how to launch a business. So if you want to start a side hustle or be your own boss and go full-time as an entrepreneur, this is the right opportunity for you to take that first step. It's an easy way for you to get started and take you step by step how to get your business off the ground and get your entrepreneurial dreams from dreams to reality. So I think this is going to be good. So I'm throwing down the challenge. I want you to go there. I want you to sign up, and to reward you for this challenge, for all the people that sign up as part of the pre-launch, we're going to be sending out to our VIP launch list. We're going to be sending out that coupon code to give you a special discount. We may even throw some bonus content or something in there. I don't know. We may. You think that's going to
be good? It's going to be good.
It's going to be great. Well, either way, we appreciate your time today. Be sure to subscribe if you haven't already. Share with a friend that would appreciate this and enjoy this. That's huge for us. Helps someone else and helps us and helps yourself because you feel better about yourself helping other people, right?
That's right.
And so be sure to do that and tune in next time for more episodes. And again, don't forget to go to www.theblessedbusiness.com/launch.